He's a rehab doctor from Chicago.
She's an emergency medicine doctor from the Twin Cities.
Together, we're examining the health equity emergency.
Inviting voices for change without the cue cards.
I'm Dr. Carrie Haley.
I'm Dr. Stephen Jackson.
And this is Off the Charts.
Welcome to the show. We're very excited today to be having great conversation about a very interesting but very pertinent and very applicable topic, particularly in today's world, microaggressions, and also called death by a thousand paper cuts. I quote Benji Matthews, refer to one of our older episodes, if you will. Dr. Haley.
Yes, I'm really excited today because one, Steve is outnumbered in terms of healthcare professionals from the emergency room to PM&R today. Physical medicine and rehabilitation, which is his specialty. So I'm really excited because we have a great group that I work with in the emergency department. And so I'm just going to have everyone kind of go around and introduce themselves so we can all get to know you a little bit more.
I'm Tina Santos, and I've been a nurse at Regency ER for several years. Since 2011.
Annalise George, I'm a nurse in the ER, probably for the past 8 years.
I'm Jenny Sloan, and I've been down in the emergency room department since 2011. I've been with Regions since 2003.
I know you guys are deeply involved in our diversity, equity, inclusion endeavors and trying to shift the culture and make sizable impact. What does that look like?
It started out as an individual change that I wanted to make, and what that looks like on a daily basis, especially when coming into work, is making sure that I'm coming in with a clean slate, if you will, a clear mind. The way that I do that is I process anything that had happened previously from work, and I let whatever stress that was go run its course through my body. And after that processing, I'm not holding any stress, any irritability, any previous experience, any previous patient experience or memory to the next patient that comes.
What is your group and what have you guys been doing? And what is the vision for your group?
We started as just kind of a opportunity to come together and talk about things that we've experienced in our department and things that we wanted to change. And I think it's been the same group of us for 2 years. And then this year, we got the opportunity to kind of take our discussions outside of our department to our safety day education days. And I'm just really excited from that point to see what happens when the conversation goes out beyond our smaller group to see how it plays out in our day-to-day care of our patients.
My experience in the group, I think I came in like, I don't know, I want to say probably it's been about a year now. I can tell you my experiences and the reasons why I even joined the group. Just the unfairness of and my experiences working down in the ER as far as being a minority and the things that I've that I experienced and that I have seen my fellow co-workers' experience, and then also the experience that I seen as far as the patients. And that what made me really wanted to join the group. When I first came to the group, I was very discouraged. How are we going to put this out here? And how are we going to get to a point where we can have those uncomfortable conversations? Mm-hmm. And the way that the group was going, you know, we all was all new to it. And it seems like the meeting was going pretty much to a dead end in my eyes because of what I have seen over the years and, you know, concerning diversity and concerning changing the culture, giving people the tools. Mm-hmm. To not necessarily change them, but for them to question themselves. How are we going to do this? This has been going on for I mean, my whole working career, and I'm sure it's been going on before then. And it's just like, you know, we have had meetings in the past. We had a meeting that was called, you know, bias meeting. And it's like that meeting itself was, I just thought that it was less like, you know, why don't you call a spade and just and call it racism? And then even when it comes to, you know, not only people, you know, Black people, but just, you know, Black and brown people, but just, you know, even with the, you know, transgender and gay and people that's just not, it's just different from, can I say it, different from white, you know, every outside of that. And, you know, and it's just like, you know, let's talk about the real thing, you know, the real, the elephant that's in the room. Mm-hmm. And the meetings that, you know, that they had in the past, I just totally didn't disagree with it. And, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I was so frustrated with the DEI meeting. But as things came along and we starting to, you know, get more information and have an outside person to come in and just kind of give us a little bit more structure of how we should at least start, you know, to go by it and to kind of get our footing and get that foundation of how we should proceed. You know, it's just like my mind started changing because I started to see, you know, we're making some grounds. It's, you know, baby steps, I guess. And that's what, you know, allowed me to hold on to it because I can actually see some changes, you know, and see, you know, that we are getting it out there and that individuals are kind of doing what we hoping that they would do. Not necessary, you know, we, you know, not trying to call anyone out and saying you this and you that, or you doing this wrong or you doing that wrong, but just to say, I mean, just to get that information out there so they can just kind of question themselves.
So what kind of shifted? You know, was there a personal aha moment or a group of aha moments?
I think this all really started post George Floyd, and we're having greater conversations as healthcare institutions, recognizing our own bias and our care that we provide. That was the background that started the relaunch of our like diversity equity committee. And I think it was kind of before going through a checklist of, yep, we had a talk about racism and microaggressions. Yep. So therefore we're great. We're all set. But it's really, it takes a long time and it's really intentional work. And I think it's no wonder that it took our group 2 years of working and having conversations with a small intimate gathering to be able to have the ability to talk to our larger department, because we are a very large department. Mm-hmm. And it's not without its challenges, but it's kind of everyday intentional work that everyone in the department has to be on board with for it to make progress and to make change.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of high profile things that just happened within the nation. I feel like the death of Trayvon Martin was something that I feel like had made waves within our department, with a few of our employees. We had lots of, there was just so many, there were so many anti-immigrant thing, you know, the wall being built, those are other things that I feel like really did kind of lead up to this. And there was, it just felt like there were so many reverberations of those. I feel like as a department, how we had trouble addressing these formally. And in a unified place.
Those were really huge events too. And, you know, in the work that we do, in the department that we do, we're seeing patients on their worst day or at their mm-hmm. worst. And we're often intimately involved in some of, it may not be the large scale, you know, big headliner murder, but we see gun violence every day. We see intimate partner violence every day. We see the effects of racism and what society has, you know, where people are in society. We see the effects of that every single day. So I think that, you know, kind of bringing it back to like those microaggressions and stuff and like seeing and hearing them every single day, eventually it accumulates. And I feel like the group really made a huge conscious effort to, okay, it's like enough's enough. And I think it's great that your small group is now really expanding. I'd like to hear what come, you know, some of the thoughts about what does it mean when you're expanding and how is the plan to kind of roll it out to maybe someone who's not quite there yet, or, you know, some of our colleagues who don't experience it or don't experience it in the same way.
I know there was a push from amongst the core members to get leadership there.
Mm-hmm. That's strategy.
Right. I mean, but that's where we started, you know, because I think previous attempts, like Jenny was saying, you know, like some things were missing and what are those? And I do feel like leadership starting there is really sets the tone. So I think what we had commented about in those early meetings is like, we need more leadership here. And it's great that they responded.
Yeah.
And we see them now and we notice them now. And, or you know what I mean? Like their presence is, I guess, yeah, just very noticeable. And the stance that they have taken in this education rollout amongst the department is like, this is our norm. So, yeah, I'm glad that they took a firm stance in that.
Yeah. And you know, and then going back to the aha moment, allowing us to say what we want to say, you know, going back to having those uncomfortable conversations. And the aha moments is, you know, when I had it in my, not only in my head, but in my heart as well, that leadership was, you know, I have never experienced leadership like we have now. And I definitely give them kudos, and they definitely support us, and we was able to express ourselves, you know, freely. I'm sure, you know, all of us only know what we seen growing up. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you know, you take that into school and you know, and that's what's learned in school. This is what you are taught, because the people that's teaching you, that's what they know. So it's just like, let's get them, the residents, the new employees, the new nurses, the new medics, the new ERTs, you know, let's get that out there now when they're coming into the job, so they know that this is the culture that we want to have in our department, in our hospital. That was the aha moment for me when I seen that leadership had our backs, mm-hmm. and supported us into, you know, putting it out there of what we feel and what we think should take place.
Leadership being involved, and not just being involved, but leadership leading the efforts is essential. And I think going back to, I think what we've all kind of alluded to and even said explicitly is that, you know, we want to change culture. We don't just want different pockets of people on board and, you know, in alignment with what we're trying to do as an organization, but there needs to be an expectation of how we are to be and who we are to be, you know, living our values, and everyone that works here and everyone that visits here and receives care from us, they need to feel welcomed, included, and valued. That's not an option. That's not a, well, I hope you felt welcome. No, you need to feel welcome, or else we're not doing our job. And I think setting that culture of expectation, it had to happen. It's unfortunate there were tragedies. You know, we've talked about George Floyd many, many times on our podcast, and Trayvon Martin and the many others, you know, and the many other incidents that have happened. But I think there was a shift. And I think, you know, more than ever, we're having uncomfortable conversations. It's not a fad. It's not just something you put on your website to say you stand with, you know, plug in the group, you know, but there's real sizable change that has to happen now, because, you know, now the numbers are talking, you know, now we're looking at data and mm-hmm. we're looking at the disparities, and, you know, this is a health equity podcast. You can look at our health equity numbers, and we got a lot of work to do.
I think in the emergency department as well, we're uniquely suited as being that first point of contact for patients, and the importance of building that trust from the beginning, and how one comment, one microaggression can break all the trust and work that you've done. So everyone needs to be collectively engaged in the work that we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's even to assume that we come in with trust. You know what I mean? That the patients mm-hmm. come in with trust.
Right.
With, you know, when they are in our care.
They may not.
They may, right?
And so come in the red.
and I think we're not used to that. You know, like I've heard for several years in a row, it's just like nursing is the most trusted profession in this country. And I was like, so when are we not?
I think more often than not, we're trying to rebuild the trust with patients that have right. been historically had their trust broken than their experiences mm-hmm. in healthcare.
Yeah. And I think we need to approach every community, every patient as like, we actually don't have your trust, but I can earn it. And we can do that as an organization, as a department. And
And it's just like, for me, it's like,
I love it.
Action speaks louder than words. Being that example and speaking up. That's another thing that far as, you see something, say something, you know, that's not right. It lead by example. I feel that I have that freedom to say something.
Yep. I feel like there's been, even in the years that I've been there, you know, that a shift of being afraid that you might get in trouble for saying something, or you might be looked down upon because you called something out, to being encouraged to do it and supported if you do see something, because it's more like we want to know. And I feel like also just even kind of to your comments, Jenny, about the culture in the emergency department too. And like with, I remember when I first came here, like there's a lot of like almost grumblings about needing to use the iPad interpreter or something. And now, like, honestly, I really feel like everyone is really, help me find the iPad interpreter. I need the iPad, or leave the interpreter on. There's not near, like, the culture is slowly, but it is, I think, shifting.
Yeah. And I think, and it is slowly changing. And I think we also have to, like, think about why it is so slow to change. I mean, to Jenny's point, like, having the freedom to say something. What was the barrier there, mm-hmm. right? And one of the barriers was a very real fear of retaliation. So when you did have like a very negative experience from saying something that is maybe related to your identity or, you know, mm-hmm. like how you treat someone, but if it just very much affects your core, like that's the history that we're working with to not only have the freedom, but like now we have to, as individuals, have to work through like, you know, the uncomfortableness of that and facing that and being mm-hmm. brave again to do so.
Yeah. And it's just like, for me, I look at it like this just to keep myself encouraged, because we didn't get here overnight. Mm-hmm. And you know, what's going on here has been going on since basically day one. For me, in my mind, you know, it's going to be slow. It's going to be a slow process, but I can see that process. I have seen a change that I never would have thought that would happen. Even the diversity in staff mm-hmm. and, you know, diversity in, you know, far as, you know, staff and leadership. You know, I see that change, and that makes a huge difference. I can even see a shift in, you know, the respect, you know, far as from doctor to tech, or from nurse to housekeeping, or whatever have you. You know, it's just like some of that, you know, big eyes and little U's is kind of getting broke down. And I can literally see that. It's very, very slow, but it's happening. And it's just like, I look at the work that we are doing, and, you know, as we get better and as we find, you know, more information, that things around us will as well, mm-hmm. you know, get better for everybody. Because it's like, you know, the cultures is not just for staff with patients, mm-hmm. but it's from staff to staff that I have seen change.
You know, we're talking about microaggressions here, and, you know, we've defined these terms in previous episodes. Microassaults are, for example, telling a racist joke and saying, oh, just kidding. A microinsult is being I guess, unintentionally discriminatory. And a micro invalidation is saying that, you know, there is no racism, or, you know, what you're feeling is in your mind, or it's all in your head. It didn't happen, or it's not there. And, you know, I'm just curious as to, are there any personal stories that stand out to you guys as care providers where someone has, you know, micro assaulted you, or, you know, said something off-putting that you knew didn't come from a good place? I'll just put it there.
I have felt many of that over the years, and I have seen my fellow coworkers also experience that over the years, where it's just like, I'm gonna use a patient example, but it's many. But I will go into a patient's room and, you know, and doing my job as I do, and I will get questions about, okay, did you go to school for this? I mean, how many years you had to go to school to learn this? And they'll start asking me questions like that. But that same patient, same staff level, another ERT, I have experienced going to that same room and none of those questions are being asked. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, I want to repay it back. And, you know, it's like, why are you asking the questions? But I don't, you know, just that's because I have experienced it over the years that, you know, that I have learned to maintain my peace, you know, because that would go into an argument. But another microaggression is when I, you know, doing my job, and I will have a staff member that's, you know, that's, I guess you would say above me, another nurse or another provider, to question what I have done. And then when they seen that I knew what I was doing, it was just like, you know, they would like say something else that's like, they would question me at first. And I had another staff member to say, oh, you know, Jenny's been here for a long time. And, you know, Jenny, you know, she, you know, she's really good, blah, 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 you know, and to kind of explain them to me. And then the whole thing would change, you know. Oh, I was just, you know, this just didn't look right to me. So I was just asking. And I was just like, you know, like, for instance, you know, like, I would do an EKG. And the EKG is off.
The EKG is a heart tracing for those who aren't medical.
Yes. The EKG is off. And I have someone, you know, he questioned me like three times, you know, he's like, you know, was the tapes right or was this right? And I was just like, I did it three times. Oh, I was just asking because this just doesn't look right. But I'm like, okay. So different microaggressions like that, but it's many. I don't think our podcast is long enough, but it's many.
Since you can't see me, I identify as a Mexican-American woman. I had an incident where a coworker joked about, and I'll paraphrase here, building a wall around my car.
Oh my gosh.
And it's wild to me because I feel like, so it was on a unit, like it was in the middle of one of our pods, and two of my, I'll call them upstanders, responded by saying, no, you can't. I had my own words and I left. I mean, it takes a while to, you know, like I see your facial reactions here, you know, I mean, you know, there's a lot of raised eyebrows, and maybe some would not call that a microaggression, but it was absolutely played off as a joke.
That's a macroaggression.
As I process this, you know, and it's taken a really long time to do so, it's crazy to me to think about, like, that I feel very fortunate that this aggression was made in front of people that spoke up. And I also can't believe that those words just came out of my mouth. Like, I'm very fortunate that this aggression happened. You know, like, I can't imagine, you know, had that pod not responded the way they did, how much longer that would have taken to address and process.
I have, you know, with my hair. I have had those over the years as well. I had someone to actually, you know, my hair went from braided to an afro. Just if you guys don't know, I'm Black American. And I had someone to actually put their hands in my hair and say, oh, how, I just wanted to see how that feel. And that particular day, I kept my composure in a way where I didn't lose my job, because that's how much, you know, it's just something rose up in me. And I have got that different things like that over the years, over our heads. And, you know, you call it a scarf, you can call it a wrap, you can call it whatever you want. I was told that, why am I wearing that? And other things were said, which, you know, things like that over the years, you kind of black it out of your head. But as Tina was telling her story, you know, it kind of comes back. I can't remember my response, but I remember that same person sent it to another girl, which was Black, on her head, and she pulled me to the side and she was actually crying. And I was just like, I didn't know what to do, because it's like going back to that culture, you know, you thinking that, cause everything gets turned on you. And you know, it's like, okay, you reported this and this and this and that, and it's just like, you know, you make it out like it's no big deal. But it's like, you know, it's not a big deal to you, but it's a big deal to us. Yeah. So I didn't know how to even respond to her. And she was, yeah, I didn't even know how to, like, you know, well, you should do this or you should say this. I didn't know what to say. You know, so I didn't say anything. And I kind of regret that, you know. But yeah, it's, yeah. And going back to the microaggression, it's so many. So many.
Yeah, it's a never ending, but hopefully improving battle, I guess. I mean, yeah. I think we all in this room probably have had multiple microaggressions, macro aggressions, like just blatant aggression directed our way. But I think, you know, as we feel safe in having the space and leadership that is supportive of us reporting or letting others know our feelings and that it's not okay to say things or to perform certain, you know, like ways that we act with or interpersonal reactions and interactions. I think hopefully that means that people will start identifying the words that they use and the way that they say them and whom they're saying them to. And that will hopefully help us kind of continue to move in the right direction about it. And I think just talking about it is huge. And like, we used to not talk about it. And I think just talking about it, people can recognize it. And that is at least one step in the right direction.
Annalise, I want to give you the final word.
Oh, really?
any take home points or anything you'd like our listeners to walk away with as we, you know, kind of conclude this, again, very important, but, you know, pretty impactful discussion about microaggressions and how to cope with it.
I think it's about, like we were saying, creating a culture where we can safely call out microaggressions so they don't have that continued building effect, as Jenny was saying, that she had throughout her career and never had a voice to speak up. And it is a responsibility of everyone in a department, if you recognize it and you see it, to call it out. Call it out in a way to learn and to grow from there, I think is really important to get people on board with making the change. We were talking to Tina and myself the other day about kind of, especially the battles in our department. It's so fast moving and we're so, we hold a lot in and we don't ever really process it. And we need to do a better job of creating a space where we can say, hey, I noticed that interaction, it bothered me. Can I talk to you about why it bothered me? And creating a way to have a dialogue so we don't continue to build up on our microaggressions. So we stop the behavior, we call it out, we recognize it, we try to correct it in real time, but then we also build from there and try not to repeat it.
Well, thank you guys for your time and for what you do. Thank you for, in spite of the challenges and the challenging environment, I can only imagine being a non-ER clinician, the emergency-ness of what you do. But thank you for still delivering great care in spite of everything that happens. And, you know, thank you guys for being, you know, and contributing to this culture that we're shifting into so that all are welcomed, included, and valued and thriving.
Thank you for being here and sharing your stories and being vulnerable. And I think it'll be really impactful.
Thank you.
Off the Charts is a production of Health Partners and Park Nicolet.
It is recorded by Jimmy Bellamy, with creative by Peggy Arnson, Tina Long, Tim Myers, and Jeff Jondahl.
Production services provided by Matriarch Digital Media.
Our theme music is by Ryan Eich.